You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, New Orleans. It's 8:08 in the morning on Monday morning. My name is Jacques Morial. I'm the guest host, sitting in for Oliver Thomas for the Good Morning Show. We're coming to you from the historic WBOK studios on Gentilly Boulevard, the cradle of Black Talk Radio in New Orleans. And we're honored this hour to have as our guest Eve Abrams, the producer of Unprisoned, and Brother Derwin Button, the chief public defender. Who's got a really tough job, and they've got you making bricks without straw, right? but we're going to talk continue talking about criminal justice in New Orleans, criminal justice reform. But Eve, you have some good news. We've got a new feature coming to WBOK that you've produced, so
yeah.
Tell us about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, Unprisoned is a public radio project. It's one of 15 projects across the country that is looking to change public radio, make public radio more public. Mm-hmm. And this project here in New Orleans is looking at how mass incarceration affects our city, how people are serving time on the outside. And in the beginning of the series, I looked at municipal court, mm-hmm. which I call the front door of the criminal justice system, and that's the story we're about to hear.
Great.
The United States has 5% of the world's population, but over 25% of its prisoners. We imprison more people than any other country on the planet. And of all the states, Louisiana imprisons the most. This is Unprisoned. I'm Eve Abrams. In the last 10 years, New Orleans has cut its jail population by almost 60%, but the city still has one of the highest incarceration rates in the nation. A block from the criminal court, on the corner of Tulane and Broad, is municipal court. For many people in New Orleans, this lesser-known court is the gateway to the criminal justice system.
We handle more cases in Orleans Parish Municipal Court, criminal cases, than any place in the state of Louisiana.
This is Judge Sean Early. He's been a municipal court judge for 22 years in Orleans Parish. Before that, he was a public defender. Judge Early says municipal court handles around 30 to 40,000 cases a year. 30 to 40,000. That's like if one in every 10 people in Orleans Parish had a case. But of course it doesn't work that way. Some people have multiple cases, and more often than not, they get complicated. Regardless of whether the defendant can pay, there are fines and fees associated with just about every case, court costs, diversion fees, and if someone doesn't come to court to pay them, or come to court period, they're found in contempt, which is another $200 fine, plus a warrant is issued for their arrest. These warrants, called attachments, are the number one way people get caught up in the system. About half the cases that go through municipal court have one or more attachments.
They're sitting in a computer, you're sitting in court, they're not getting resolved, and it puts it...
A strain on the system. Early says that starts with the NOPD, because every time they stop someone...
They got to run their name, and that's man hours, and then bring them down to Orleans Parish Prison and book them. Then they come to our court within a couple of days, and then the city's paying for the cost to house these people.
House them in jail while they wait to see a judge. So it's expensive and time-consuming. And it's not just the system that gets bogged down. It's people. Municipal court is where defendants lose control of their money, their time, and often their freedom. Take Dwayne Brown. He's 26 and a manager at a McDonald's. He has four kids. Back in 2013, he got into a fight with his girlfriend.
I kicked that door in because I'm like, you gonna let me see my daughter? Like, I literally kicked that door in.
The police happened to be driving by. They arrested Dwayne and took him to jail. In court, he was placed under a protective order, which is like a restraining order, to stay away from his girlfriend and his daughter.
And that's when I took the anger management class. I had to pay $30 every Wednesday.
Dwayne finishes the class and gets his certificate. The next year, he gets pulled over for an obscured license plate. When they run his name, the police find an attachment for violation of protective orders on his prior case, which Dwayne still doesn't understand. The system is really unclear, and the public defender's office says it's common for their clients to be confused. Regardless, Dwayne gets booked into jail and bonds out, paying $250. His trial is rescheduled 3 times, and he misses the last court date because he was working. So that's another attachment, and he ends up in jail for 10 days with more fines and fees, and on it goes. So far, he's spent close to $2,000 and 12 days in jail, losing work time.
I'm the only one working, and I'm the only one paying bills. So therefore, I really don't see no money, and I only get paid 2 times a month. And therefore, I got to pay light bill, pay rent, make sure my son got Pampers and milk. I'm in a house with 5 kids, and like that's where my money goes. And like when I went to jail, I done missed out on 10 days of work just sat in jail behind that.
Municipal court doesn't deal with violent crimes like rape, robbery, or murder. This high-volume court, the highest in Louisiana, handles only criminal misdemeanor cases, cases carrying jail sentences of up to 6 months or less. They're not high stakes, but the stakes are high for the people involved. Assaults and batteries, as well as domestic violence cases like Dwayne Brown's, are some of the most serious in municipal court. But most of them, well, here's some of what the court sees.
There's the marijuanas.
Obstruction of a sidewalk, which is basically sitting on a sidewalk.
Public drunkenness, huge.
Unlicensed dog cases.
Lewd conduct if you're urinating in public.
Aggressive panhandling.
Spitting.
Spitting on a sidewalk.
Again, Judge Early.
A lot of trespassing charges, disturbing the peace.
Do you see these kinds of cases every day?
Yes, every day.
A lot of them every day?
Yes.
So it's a good chunk of your cases.
Yes, it is a good chunk, yeah.
There are 2 sections of municipal court in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, and they're packed. Between the 4 sections, they see something like 200 to 400 cases every day. And in each courtroom, several of them are going at the same time. There are clerks and city attorneys, DAs and public defenders, and the judge, talking to different people dealing with different cases. It's understandable how defendants might be confused about how to resolve their cases, or even how or when their cases will be heard, as they sit there waiting, often missing work, for hours. There's no recording allowed in the courtroom, but Jacob McCarty, the client support administrator for the Orleans Parish Defenders, says it sounds like
a bunch of people chattering at once, who are like sitting out in the audience waiting on their case to be called, and the clerk who's calling names and case numbers. Case number 118, John Doe versus the City of New Orleans.
And then a cop, and you'd be like, quiet in the courtroom.
Sorry, turn your phone off. And then the judge, maybe every now and then shouting, quiet in the court. I mean, it's an endless onslaught, and nobody's identifying
mayhem.
Who they are.
Yeah.
That was also Tess Kilbane-Myers, a client advocate at municipal court. She says the court's kind of set up like a church with benches, except where the altar normally is, there's a judge. And instead of a choir, there's a boxed-in area where the inmates sit.
They're all in their orange jumpsuits and their chains. They're cuffed at their ankles. Today I had a client who is 34 weeks pregnant, so they couldn't fit the handcuffs around her ankles, so she was cuffed at her hands.
Remember, this is municipal court.
The sheriff's office has to transport them from the jail to the courthouse, and so then when they walk in, you know, you hear the jingle of the chains.
You walk into that courtroom, and you're just, you know, I've been doing this for quite a while, and it still catches your breath. You're like, there are so many people of color here. And yet I know that the city is not made up of 90% African-American. So why is it that 90% of the people who are in orange are African-American?
Public defender Danny Engelberg isn't the only one noticing how many black people are in municipal court or in any court. It's hard to miss.
Who's sitting in court waiting to see the judge? What do they look like?
Mostly African-Americans, like me.
It's mostly, I can say 85% black. That's all you see, orange in the box back there who locked up.
Who's waiting? Mostly black. I mean, there was a couple of white people in there.
I think it was about 85% African-American that was sitting there.
One of the problems of our court systems in New Orleans, where the great majority, upwards of 90% of the people we incarcerate in our local jail are black people, mostly poor black people, is they rely too heavily on funds generated by people who are arrested, prosecuted, detained, and convicted.
That's John Wool, the director of the Vera Institute of Justice in New Orleans. He says this amounts to a terribly costly transfer of wealth from our poorest communities to our criminal justice system.
So this means that the financial basis of release and detention is a revenue generator. And the result is that we detain lots of people who are not a threat to society, but because they're poor.
Wool says because our criminal justice system is largely funded by the people churned through it, in order to pay for itself, the system is driven to become ever bigger, far bigger and more complicated than necessary to do what it's supposed to do, make our communities safe. Unprisoned is brought to you by WWNO and Finding America, a national initiative produced by AIR with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Unprisoned's theme music is by Greg Schatz. Our editor is Vicki Merrick. Learn more about Unprisoned at WWNO.org and Facebook.com/Unprisoned. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Join us next time as Municipal Court holds court in one of New Orleans' homeless shelters. I'm Eve Abrams. This is Unprisoned.
Wow, that was a segment from Unprisoned. We have the producer of that wonderful series, Eve Abrams, here with us.
Good morning.
And also Derwin Button, the chief public defender for the city of New Orleans. Eve, tell us a little bit about how this series came together and how you might have been interested and inspired to do it.
Great question. I just wonder what took me so long to do it, honestly. Well, AIR, who is the Association of Independents and Radio, they put out a call for producers to tell stories about their communities. Mm-hmm. And I felt that this was the story of our community. And, I think that it's a tough job telling stories of criminal justice and the press that the press has to deliver daily news often means that we're looking at people's mugshots and hearing about horrible crimes, and we don't really hear from how people are affected in their daily lives. We don't hear the stories of the collateral damage of the system that we've built. Mm-hmm. And I felt like living in New Orleans, it's like shooting a fish in a barrel to find people who are affected by that system. And I wanted to talk to people and hear their stories and help amplify voices that we don't hear from very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for doing that. Very important. I know that I've enjoyed the series and you're bringing it to WBOK, correct?
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. That was actually the idea of WWNO, and I thought it was such a great idea. The more people that hear it, the better. I think it's a good place to build a conversation from. You know, it kind of provides a safe platform for people to talk about things, especially people who don't know a lot about what's going on. I found that New Orleans is sort of divided that way. There are the people that know far too well what's going on with our criminal justice system because it impacts their lives. And then there are the people who live in a bubble quite apart from that. And for those people, I think this has been shocking information.
Well, thank you for shocking them, for sure. And because it's really worthy of an equitable and thoughtful discussion. Mr. Button, you're the chief public defender, and you've got a really tough job. You have two jobs, right? You have one job of actually defending and advocating on behalf of people charged with crimes. And the other job you got is keeping the ship afloat and finding the resources and battling and scraping for the resources to represent those people.
I think
that segment we just heard touched on this. How exactly is the public defender's office funded right now?
Well, first, thanks for having me on this morning. And in terms of how we're funded, it's really a symptom of how the system is structured. Louisiana has the only user pay criminal justice system in the country. And by that, I mean we depend largely on fines, fees, and costs paid by people going through the system to actually operate the system. We lean on it more than anybody else in the country, and that hits public defenders particularly hard. On average, two-thirds of public defender budgets around the state depend on court costs and fees, and the biggest fee for public defenders is the public defender fee, which is paid if you plead guilty or are found guilty going through the criminal justice system. And what makes it more absurd is that you only pay it if you plead guilty or are found guilty, which if you're paying attention, the public defender is paid to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the funding comes through largely. And because we depend on people going through, the volume of people is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And so the highest volume court is going to be your municipal court and your traffic court, mm-hmm. and they're going to be your biggest revenue sources on any given day. And that's the same across the state. And so it's not a joke to say that public defense depends on how many traffic citations there are mm-hmm. in a jurisdiction. And so it's one of the things we're hoping to change, mm-hmm. to reform very soon for our state, because it is inadequate, unreliable, and unstable to have a system built like that.
How do other states fund their public defender?
Well, it varies by state. Every court in the country, including the federal system, have fines and fees associated with them. It's just that they don't depend on them to run their system.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's usually some combination of fines and fees with some general appropriation that is based on the work that is projected in that district or jurisdiction. And they also work to make sure things stay fair. That's mm-hmm. another unique feature of Louisiana. It is structurally unjust, mm-hmm. not just something that you feel is unjust. Mm-hmm. It is unjust on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have in places like Tennessee a parity statute so that there's not so much difference between the prosecutor and the defense. And that's a general fund appropriation that comes from places like Tennessee, places like Dallas County, places like Florida. These are not bastions of liberal thought.
Mm-hmm.
These are places that take the Sixth Amendment and understand that you have to be fair in your criminal justice system, or you'll end up with an unjust system and corruption throughout, mm-hmm. which is what we see in our system here in Louisiana.
Clearly. So Eve, in working on the on prison series, you talk to scores, if not hundreds, of people who are involved one way or another in the criminal justice system here in New Orleans.
I have.
Witnesses, defendants, prosecutors, public defenders, private lawyers, judges. What do you think the prevailing appreciation is for the fairness of the system here?
I don't think anybody talked about it being fair.
Nope.
I never.
Nobody.
No, not really.
Hmm.
For a lot of people, I think a big population that you didn't mention is the families mm-hmm. of people who are churned through the system.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hear those stories later on in the summer. But I think there's also a lot of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of trying to make their way through this system that is incredibly unclear and feels rigged and mm-hmm. time-consuming. Really a big suck
mm-hmm.
from their lives
mm-hmm.
of time and money mm-hmm. and just mental
mm-hmm.
mental time to, mm-hmm. to try to understand it. No, there was no feeling of balance that I encountered. I mean, one thing that I was really shocked by was how unbalanced our supposed adversarial system is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure Darwin can speak to this much, much more eloquently than I, but I was really surprised by the funding disparity between the district attorney's mm-hmm. office and the public defender's mm-hmm. office, and then simply how much time an attorney might have to get to know their client and understand their case and mount a defense. And I mean, one thing that I was incredibly impressed by when I hung out in municipal court was the degree of hustle
mm-hmm.
from the public defender's
mm-hmm.
office.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were literally running in the courtroom,
mm-hmm.
you know, wow. running from the judge's bench to their podium, to their clients in the box, out of the box, to mm-hmm. their families waiting, working so hard to try to give the best defense mm-hmm. possible. And then similarly, the people that we heard from who work for the public defender's office but whose work is outside of the courtroom in client support, their office is on the side. It's when you walk in municipal court, they're like on the windows there, and they're in these little cubicles where you can hear everybody's conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But constantly people are coming to them to ask them questions, and people who are not even their clients.
Mm-hmm.
They're just providing support to anybody who goes through the building to try to understand this incredibly confusing system.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Bunton, tell us really what the risks are of a system that everybody knows is unfair. But before that, can you tell us, in terms of real dollars, the funding disparity between the district attorney, the prosecutor, and the public defender?
Right. Well, in just pure dollars, their budget is more than twice mine. So it's about somewhere between $14 and $15 million, and ours is about $6 to $6.5 million a year. But it's the disparity increases when you really think about the whole of the system and what is really oriented toward the sort of capture, detention, and conviction of people in our community. And so you have he's got 30 investigators. Our DA has 30 investigators. I have 8. He has free rent. He has pension. He has use of the city's fleet in terms of cars to do his investigation. We have none of that. We pay rent. We pay for our IT. We pay for our own travel. And so you have these disparities begin to grow. And along with those 30 investigators, he has the benefit of a $140 million police force making cases for him as he does his work. And it even goes down to the courts. If you go to the court's website and look at the court's mission, the court's stated mission is to prosecute all crimes in New Orleans, not to judge, not to adjudicate, to prosecute all crimes in Orleans Parish. So we are literally institutionally the only entity that is set up to, whose defined job is to protect innocence, defend the Constitution, and demand accountability and fairness in the system. And so you have, in very real dollars, both in kind and direct, a huge disparity. And then when you look at it statewide, just about every dollar public defenders spend, prosecutors spend 3. And you see those disparities up and down the state.
Wow. And before the break, can you tell us really what is the risk of a system where everybody believes it is unjust? What's the practical risk on the ground?
Well, there's the sort of practical, and then there's the ripple effect. I think in the last segment, you sort of touched on it, and that is a just wholesale disrespect for the criminal justice system. The community simply does not believe it is organized to keep us safe. It is organized as fair, and that will breed behavior from folks who are inclined to act up to not worry about the consequences because the system is so corrupt and so unfair, they were never going to get a fair shake anyway. So that's one thing. But there are some just empirical, just nuts and bolts outcomes that we can point to. We're the highest incarcerator in the country. We're also leading our country in wrongful convictions. I think the only other jurisdiction ahead of us is Illinois, the only state ahead of us. And it is no accident that this is occurring as we have a public defender system in crisis. We have 2/3 of public defenders' offices around the country in service restrictions, don't have enough resources to handle the work that comes at them. And we have a system designed where we depend on these user fees. And so the nuts and bolts is you're going to have innocent people going to jail. You'll have people going to jail for much longer terms than they ought to. You got longer lengths of stay in our jails and detention centers. And you got a coercive system where people have wholly bought into the fact that it's not fair, and therefore why pay any attention to it.
And that that itself is really, you know, corrosive to a community and its survival, really. We're going to go to a break in just a minute. It's 8:32 in New Orleans. This is WBOK 1230 AM. I'm Jacques Morial, guest host for my good friend Oliver Thomas, who will return tomorrow. Our guests this hour are Eve Abrams, producer of the Unprisoned series, a new feature on WBOK, and Brother Derwin Button, fighting a big battle as the Orleans Parish Public Defender. We'll be back right after the break. Thank you.
You are now listening to the radio station that's keeping it real. WBOK 1230 AM, where it's real talk for real time.
Listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, New Orleans. This is the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM. I'm Jacques Morial. I'm your guest host this morning, sitting in for my good friend Oliver Thomas, who will return tomorrow. It's 8:38 in New Orleans, 8:38, 76 degrees in New Orleans. This hour, we've been talking about criminal justice reform all morning, but this hour, our guests are Eve Abrams, producer of the Unprisoned radio series, new to WBOK, and Duren Button, the chief public defender. And during the break, we were talking about, practically speaking, how the public defender's office is really the only check on a system that everybody recognizes as unfair. Tell us a little bit about that part of your mission, Mr. Bunton, and how you really meet that mission without a commitment to the resources that you need.
Well, it's difficult. Mm-hmm. In a word, it's difficult to really meet the mission and really meet the obligations we believe a public defender has, mm-hmm. that is to protect innocence, defend the Constitution, and demand accountability and justice within the system. And we try our best to hold ourselves up to that standard, which is what we believe the constitutional standard mm-hmm. is for institutional defenders. But we are the only sort of institutional component that is meant to place a check on power within the system, and we do that by testing the state's case. We do that by really representing our clients and helping them in their lives. We do litigation as well as support for our clients to try and make that happen. And what we see in New Orleans is, by and large, we have a city that is actually proud of their award-winning public defender's office mm-hmm. and has provided support and resources over the years in greater numbers than any other local parish. But it seems as though at the state level, they sort of resent it. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what we're up against in our advocacy right mm-hmm. now.
Oh, yeah, well, the state government and the state legislature is hostile to so many things. I mean, I think down here in New Orleans, we wonder sometimes, how difficult it is here dealing with local government and making sound public policy. But, man, when you go to Baton Rouge, it's an entirely different world. It really is. Eve, you talk to a lot of people who defend, who depend on the public defender's office.
Yeah.
Do those folks understand the defendants and their families understand the real constraints that the public defender's office is under?
No, I don't think they do. I don't think they do. I think a couple people who I spoke with felt like, oh, I only have to pay $45. That's something I can afford. Mm-hmm. I can do that. Is that the correct amount to run for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's something I can afford. Some spoke about trying to get other, private attorneys. Actually, one family I spoke with got a private attorney and wished that they hadn't. They mm-hmm. felt that private attorney was in cahoots with the police officer. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think they do. I think they're really trying to make their way through this system, which is completely unclear, and they're grateful for the help that they get. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be impossible for anybody not to see how incredibly busy mm-hmm. the public defender's office is. As I said before, they are literally running in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that in every interaction with their clients, there's a focus. I'm speaking mm-hmm. to you right now, but it's not like you have somebody who's working around the clock, mm-hmm. Just on your case. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear that they're juggling a multitude of mm-hmm. cases.
Hmm. Well, I also wonder, all of the costs imposed on
the fines and fees.
Well, not just the fines and fees, and I'm speaking specifically now about municipal court, which are essentially petty crimes, minor crimes. And a lot of it is, you know, discretionary punishment from police officers on the street.
Yeah.
But not just the fines, the fees, the opportunity costs, the lost work.
Right.
You know, losing your job. If you get locked up for a couple of days, don't show up at work,
you're out of a job.
You get fired. If you're locked up for a week or two, you miss paying rent, you're evicted. All of those costs and, you know, the costs that are not recovered in a really perverse way to fund the public defender's office, but the costs that are lost.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it seems pretty tremendous, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that there's anybody, you know, actually, not for this story, but for the next story, I interviewed the chief judge, Judge Charbonnet, Desiree Charbonnet at Municipal Court. And, you know, my first question to her was, tell me about your job.
Mm-hmm.
And right out of the bat, she said, I do everything I can to keep a nonviolent offender from being locked up because I don't think it helps anyone. It doesn't help them. It doesn't help their family. It doesn't help the city be safer, which I thought was really remarkable that the chief judge, her number one priority is to keep nonviolent offenders out of the system. And that's something I heard over and over again, this real interest in keeping people out of the system, because once you're in, you are going to be wrapped up in all of these things that take away from your life. Even if it's, you know, like Dwayne Brown, who we heard from, you're going to be put in an anger management class. You know, all of those classes, there's a good intention behind them, I believe, but you then have to get to that class. You have to find transportation to that class. You know, I think it's, we have to remember a lot of people who are in these situations are really struggling financially in the first place. So a day of lost work or having the extra burden of paying for that class, figuring out a way to get there can take hours and hours from your day. You know, I think there's a lot of good intention, but what it actually looks like in people's lives is very intrusive and perhaps sometimes helpful. I have met people who were very grateful for the substance abuse programs that they'd managed to get into and grateful to, we'll hear from one man next week who was very grateful to Judge Early for his help and compassion. So I don't think there's, it's not malintention. It's just that what, when somebody says you need to do this X, Y, and Z in your life, it's really difficult to know what that, how that's going to play out for that person. And many, many times it's going to be a burden and it's not going to actually be the thing that they need. I think there's this idea that by the state coming into a person's life, they're going to be able to provide something that that person doesn't already have. And that's really a presumption.
Yeah, it's a little bit absurd.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is helpful, but sometimes it's really damaging.
Yeah, I can imagine. And often, Mr. Bunton, the first stop after arrest is a bond hearing, and I think most people, most of the public, don't understand the purpose of bond. Tell us exactly what the purpose of bond is, so folks really understand, because there's a widely held misperception about that.
Well, bond primarily is used to secure your presence at future hearings.
Make sure you show up for court.
Make sure you show up for court. Bond is not intended to keep us safe, for example. I think what people need to understand is when someone goes, someone is arrested and they show up and a bond is placed on them, the first thing that that judge has ordered is release. And I think that's what people think, oh, there's a big bond, we're safe. First and foremost, what that judge said is, I'm releasing you, and the condition is you pay this amount of money. And it's not, if you're trying to keep people safe, you simply hold them. If you think someone's dangerous, you simply hold them. And one example of this was in state when Telly Hankton was arrested. There was $1 million bond placed on him, high bond. He made that $1 million bond, and he also made the $1 million bond for his cousin at that point. And this is an environment when everyone's calling Mr. Hankton, you know, one of the most dangerous people. But the court ordered release, and he was released and then was accused during that release of killing a witness that was necessary in one of his cases. And that's why we really need to look at bond for what it is and how it is operating in practice, and that is keeping poor people in jail, people who cannot make the bond. We have a contempt hearing pending for one of my lawyers because he was representing someone, a homeless person who came into court. The court initially gave an ROR and then revoked that ROR. That
released on your own recognizance? Mm-hmm.
Release on recognizance because he found out our client was homeless, didn't want to release him without a residence. And so, again, if you're paying attention, we have a client in jail because he's homeless.
That is absurd.
And we're paying for that. And when we actually worked hard to get a temporary housing placement at the New Orleans Mission, and then a second one with substance abuse treatment, I believe at Bridge House, the lawyer filed a motion to reduce bond. Filed it once when we got the placement at the Mission, and it was denied, filed again essentially when we found the other placement. And not only was it denied, but the judge charged them with contempt for filing too many motions.
What?
And so that hearing is pending.
What gives you an idea. Can you say what judge that is?
That it's in magistrate court, Judge Cantrell.
That's absurd.
And that's what we said. Like, we had additional information that was going to get our client not just out. First of all, he should have been out to begin with. Homelessness does not make you more eligible for jail. But second, we actually went to work. We actually found a placement for our client and then found another placement for our client. And we should not be punished for advocating on behalf of poor people.
And Derwin, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't bonds, didn't the Supreme Court rule that bonds should be the exception and not the norm, that they should only be used for people who really do seem to be a flight risk?
That's exactly correct. You still have a liberty interest, right? And so the Supreme Court laid out factors that were supposed to be taken under consideration, with the primary purpose of bond being to secure your presence in court. And that's what they – and along the way, they've been now basically used – the outcomes, like I said, are to keep poor people in jail.
So everybody pay attention, all right? Pay attention right now. The purpose of bond is not to protect the public. Constitutionally, it is not. It is to ensure that a defendant shows up in court. And often, correct me if I'm wrong, bond is often a function of the penalty or sentence that the defendant may face. Should they be convicted? So, on the rationale that the longer you might get locked up for, the more incentive you may have to flee.
That's correct.
Well, and the more money a person has, the more likely they are to flee. So, if you're an impoverished person that has to struggle to make a bond, there's very little chance that you're going to take off to Costa Rica.
Where are you going
to
go, right? It's 8:51 in New Orleans. This is WBOK 1230 AM. This is the Good Morning Show. I'm Jacques Morial, your guest host, sitting in for my good friend Oliver Thomas, who will return tomorrow. Our guests are Eve Abrams, the producer of the Great Unprisoned radio series, new to WBOK, and Derwin Button, the chief public defender for Orleans Parish. In the time we have left, Mr. Button, tell us what we can do. What can the listeners do to support a more just criminal justice system and to support adequate funding for your office? Who should people be lighting up and calling and sending emails to and, you know, wondering when they're coming up for re-election?
Right. Well, public defense is how we operationalize. It's how we give life to the Sixth Amendment, your right to counsel. As a mentor of mine joked once, he said, the founders of this country didn't get rid of slavery, but they gave us all lawyers. You know, the Sixth Amendment is one of the original ten. And so it is a state responsibility. We need to really put pressure on our state decision makers to make sure that they are faithfully living by the Constitution when it comes to the right to counsel. So they certainly need to hear from people in our community, people affected by our criminal justice system, asking for criminal justice reform, asking to get rid of our user pay system. And locally, we need to do the same thing to ensure that we have a fair process, a just process, where we have parity. As supportive as the city of New Orleans is for our office, the $1.5 million appropriation that we're provided is still much smaller than the nearly $7 million appropriation that is provided to the district attorney's office. And there's different laws that affect that, but bottom line is we need to inject some fairness into this system so that even the poor have a chance in our system. Poor justice should look about the same as rich justice, and we're not there yet. And until we are, people need to be letting their voice be heard, particularly those who are affected by this system. Mm-hmm.
So call your state legislator, call your council member. Explain to them that you understand that this is an unjust system, and without more resources, it will remain unjust.
Exactly.
And Eve, before we have to run.
Yeah.
Tell us about what's coming up with Unprisoned, and so glad that it's going to be a feature here on WBOK.
Oh,
tell
me
us
too.
What's coming up.
Yeah, so we're going to alternate. Every Monday it'll be on the air. 1 week it'll be in the morning on this show, and next week it'll be in the afternoon, 4:30 to 5:30, and we'll be hearing the story where municipal court goes to the New Orleans Mission. So next week we'll be hearing, I believe that Lauren Anderson from your office, Derwin, will be here. She was one of the people who made municipal court at the Mission happen, and we'll hear about just how many homeless people and mentally ill people are churned through the criminal justice system. And then the week after that, we'll actually talk a little bit more about bond. Danny Engelberg, Chief of Trials, will be here, and we'll hear the story of one gentleman's trials and tribulations moving through the criminal justice system, and how innocence doesn't get you off the hook for paying a good chunk of your time and your cash to the system.
Great. And the web address, if for more information, or if you missed one of the segments, or you have podcasts as well?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you can subscribe on Stitcher and iTunes, and you can listen to all the stories at any time at wwno.org/programs/unprisoned-stories-system.
Okay, we got to get you a Bitly link. That's a long
one. I know, it's long. Just go to WWNO.org and you'll figure it out.
And I think there'll be a link on the WBOK website.
Beautiful.
Soon,
I hope so.
This is the Good Morning Show. Our guests this hour have been Eve Abrams, the producer of the Unprisoned radio series, new to WBOK on Mondays, and Derwin Button, the man who tries to make bricks without straw, Chief Orleans Parish Public Defender. I'm Jacques Morial. I've been your guest host for Oliver Thomas this morning. Oliver will be back tomorrow. But before we go, I want to remind everybody we're just 1 month away from the Essence Festival. The Essence Festival presented by Coca-Cola. Be seen and be heard at 2016 Essence Fest. June 30th to July 3rd, New Orleans. From hip-hop to Caribbean, soul to pop, R&B to gospel, you're sure to party all night long at the 2016 Essence Festival presented by Coca-Cola. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Thank you, Derwin. And keep the fight up. And for those of you who want to support the Public Defender's Office and adequate funding, contact your legislator, contact your city council member, tell them that you want a more just and more fair criminal justice system. This is the Good Morning Show. Well, coming up next, the Chuck Wagon. Chuck Perkins in the Conscious Hour, Chuck Wagon, and that little yappy dog, Louie, is he in the house? Oh, no, early bird scared Louie off the Chuck Wagon. All right, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure to be here with you and guest host for Oliver. He'll be back tomorrow. Thank you.